Let's call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:30 p.m. Today is Friday, January 27, 2023. Before we begin, I want to thank Katie Cooper-Ryder, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Amanda Kraft from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Senator Kaufman, Senator Giesel, Senator Tobin, recently appointed to this committee. Welcome. My Vice Chair, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Klayman, we have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is Senate Bill 37, Crime Counterfeit Non-Functioning Airbag, sponsored by my office. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. As I'm the sponsor of this bill, I'm going to pass the gavel to my Vice Chair, Senator Keel, for the duration of the bill presentation.
Thank you, Chair Klayman. As Chair Klayman takes the presenter's seat, I'll invite him to bring forward his intern, Emily Vigneault. I hope you'll correct me where I've made my mistake in pronouncing your name. If the sponsor and his staff will introduce yourself for the record, and please begin your remarks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For the record, I'm Matt Klayman, State Senator for Senate District H in West Anchorage. Senate Bill 37 was brought to my attention in 2021 by the Honda Motor Company and the Automotive Anti-Counterfeiting Council. In Alaska today, there is no law to prohibit the installation or reinstallation of airbags that do not meet federal safety standards. While airbags are made to protect us from serious injuries, counterfeit or non-functioning airbags are known to improperly deploy or not deploy at all, potentially resulting in serious injuries. By establishing airbag fraud as a crime, Senate Bill 37 prohibits dangerous actors from knowingly selling, installing, or manufacturing these dangerous and improper devices. The bill references both counterfeit and non-functioning airbags. A counterfeit airbag is defined as a replacement airbag displaying an unauthorized mark that is similar to the mark of a motor vehicle manufacturer or an airbag manufacturer. A non-functioning airbag is an operable or damaged airbag, or an airbag that has previously been deployed or that was removed from a vehicle because it created an unreasonable safety risk. Similar legislation has passed in 30 states. For example, the Michigan Penal Code takes a more severe approach to this crime and establishes airbag fraud as a felony punishable by 4 years of imprisonment or a fine of $10,000. In comparison, Senate Bill 37 defines airbag fraud as a Class A misdemeanor, punishable by up to 1 year of imprisonment, a fine of up to $25,000 or both, and a Class C felony, punishable by up to 5 years of imprisonment and a fine of $50,000 or both, if serious physical injury or death is involved. Airbag fraud has real-world implications. eBay has been a popular site for the sale of counterfeit or non-functioning airbags. This led the nonprofit corporation, Automotive Anti-Counterfeiting Council, known as A2C2, to call on eBay in October 2021 to prohibit the sale of all airbags after counterfeit airbags and related components were shown to be consistently available for sale on the site. In response, eBay changed their vehicle's parts and accessories policy by prohibiting the sale of deployed or rebuilt airbags and airbag covers. Airbags and their accessories may still be sold by verified sellers who must verify the authenticity of the product. Senate Bill 37 is supported by the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud, which believes in the protection of consumers and the idea that consumers should be able to trust their airbags. The state has a responsibility to protect all Alaskans from counterfeit and non-functioning airbags. This bill acknowledges victims of airbag fraud and provides consequences for those who knowingly install or provide dangerous devices. This bill also provides protection for any party involved who might not be aware of this fraud, such as owners and employees of dealerships who unknowingly install or sell vehicles with counterfeit devices. And now my staff, Emily Vigneault, will present a sectional analysis of the bill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For For the record, my name is Emily Vigneault, and I am staff to Senator Matt Clayman. Section 1 of Senate Bill 37 amends AS 2835 by adding a new section establishing and defining Iraq fraud as knowingly selling, offering for sale, installing, reinstalling, or manufacturing a counterfeit or non-functioning airbag or device that is intended to conceal a counterfeit or non-functioning airbag, or intentionally selling, leasing, or trading a vehicle that the person knows has a counterfeit or non-functioning airbag. It establishes airbag fraud as a Class A misdemeanor or a Class C felony if death or serious physical injury to another person occurs as a result of the counterfeit or non-functioning airbag. Finally, it establishes that the liability of any party in a civil action is not precluded. This section provides that this legislation does not create a duty to inspect a vehicle for a counterfeit or non-functioning airbag before its sale. Thank you for hearing this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Vigneault. Before we get to questions, the sponsors ask that we begin with invited testimony, and then we'll take committee questions on the bill. For the committee's benefit, we have one individual online to provide invited testimony, Craig Orlan, or maybe Orlan. I hope you'll correct me on that, Director of State and Local Government Affairs with the Honda Motor Company. Do we have Mr. Orlan online? Mr. Orlan, if you would introduce yourself for the record, name and affiliation, and please give your invited testimony.
Thank you. My name is Craig Orlan from the American Honda Motor Company. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate Chairman Clayman introducing this legislation. This is a very real problem that our company takes very seriously. Over the past several years, our industry has seen foreign and domestic counterfeiters flooding the market with ineffective counterfeit and non-functional airbags. None of these airbags are intended to provide protection in the event of a collision. Most are filled with newspapers, styrofoam, sawdust, or other debris, and others are quite literally bombs. As these products are making their way into the vehicles of unknown consumers and have resulted in deaths and injuries across the country. The vast majority of these products are imported from abroad, mainly from China. And our industry has been working with federal law enforcement agencies to stop them at the border. And while the federal government has tremendous help to our industry in combating this problem, they have limited authority to act. This bill would make it a crime to knowingly traffic in counterfeit and non-functional airbags and will allow for state and federal cooperation to keep these products out of consumers' vehicles and prosecute the repair shops that knowingly and intentionally install these products in people's vehicles. As Senator Clayman mentioned, similar legislation has been enacted in 30 states, with overwhelming bipartisan support and support of countless other stakeholders. And I'd just like to build on the problem. While it's impossible to know the size and scope of an underground economy, we do know that this is a very real problem and this bill has a real impact on public safety. We've tied these products to deaths and injuries around the country from Maryland to Texas to California. Additionally, through the recent Takata airbag recall, when we've gone in and replaced airbags in vehicles, we found thousands of counterfeit airbags in unknowing consumers' vehicles all over the country. And while I can't speak for the rest of the industry, Honda has worked with law enforcement officials on several cases around the country. One man in North Carolina made over $1.7 million in just under a year, selling over 7,000 fake airbags. And in California, we supported a Los Angeles Police Department raid that was made possible by similar legislation. In that case, there were hundreds of fake airbags that were found, and those airbags were deemed so dangerous that they couldn't be taken into evidence. The Los Angeles County Bomb Squad was needed to be called in to deploy those airbags in a safe manner. So most importantly, by enacting these laws, as Senator Clayman mentioned, we're making it much easier to work with e-commerce platforms to remove these listings from their sites and prevent them from ever getting into people's cars, which is our ultimate goal. I appreciate your time and your commitment to public safety, and I'm happy to answer any questions you guys might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate that. I'll turn now to committee members for questions for the sponsor or Mr. Orlan. Senator Tobin.
Mr. Orlan, thank you so much for being online, and I have what I hope is kind of an easy softball question. When is an airbag installed in a vehicle? At what point in the manufacturer process?
So an airbag is installed when the vehicle is manufactured, and that's not really the problem we're seeing. What we're seeing is the problem occurs when an airbag is deployed and then a replacement airbag is put into that vehicle. So the common case that we see is an airbag is deployed, an unscrupulous repair shop will buy a fake airbag that consists of just an airbag cover or one of these airbags that's filled with styrofoam or other debris. They'll buy that on eBay for $20, $30 and then install that in the consumer's vehicle and then charge the insurance company several hundred dollars for the price of a real airbag.
Thank you again. And just to clarify, when a dealership purchases a vehicle as a pre-owned or a vehicle that they sell that has come in through the dealership as a trade, do you inspect the airbag that has been replaced, if that has been disclosed?
So the dealerships are independently owned and operated. This bill would say that they don't have an obligation to take that airbag out and remove it and inspect it. That's really the only way to detect that in a lot of cases. But that vehicle history would be made available to the consumer.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Klayman, old habits die hard.
Another feeling.
Well, I appreciate the core intent. I'm just wondering about unintended consequences. So if, let's say, I'm selling an old vehicle that I know is maybe it doesn't even have a steering wheel in it. By selling a vehicle that's not compliant with this legislation, am I somehow opening myself up to prosecution or damages by selling a junk car, so to speak, that doesn't have an airbag?
And that's the whole purpose of the section of the bill that says there's no duty to inspect or otherwise try to figure out what's actually in the car. You actually have to show knowledge that they would have to be, for example, knowledge that the person you bought the old car from had put in a non-functioning airbag. And if you have that knowledge, then you would be exposed to prosecution on a criminal level, or you might be, they could sue you civilly. But if you didn't have knowledge, that would be a defense.
Hello?
Please.
Thank you, through the chair. I appreciate that, but I guess I'm just wondering if the absence of it, if we're written tightly enough right now where there's not a jeopardy somehow created by just selling a vehicle that you know is non-functional because, let's just say, in the extreme, there's no steering column in it, but that somehow, that's selling a non-compliant vehicle and you knew it. I'm thinking of people that might want to buy a non-functioning car like my first two were, which became ultimately a working car after a lot of hard work. I called it Frankenwagon. So just that model of where people buy a junk car on purpose.
So that the steering column example you give would be an example in which if you bought a car without a steering column and then you put a steering wheel in and it was a model that called for an airbag in the steering wheel, you would have some, because you were getting those parts, you would presumably take steps to make sure you got legitimate parts and didn't get fraudulent parts. But even if you bought from what you believed to be a legitimate part and installed it, you wouldn't be liable for installing the fraudulent bag unless you knew it was a fraudulent or a fake bag. But part of, as you may, well, you may not be as aware, but I've been working with both auto dealers and manufacturers for the last several years, and this legislation was one that we vetted with the auto dealers here in Alaska, and they support the bill. You don't have a letter of support, and we can get one, but we talked with them because they were very concerned to make sure that you were not going to be put in a position of liability for selling products that had fraudulent parts that you didn't know were fraudulent. You have to show that knowledge.
Follow up. Thank you, through the chair. I guess I'm thinking of in the absence of, and so I'm just thinking around that. So if I were to put a steering wheel in that did, maybe I was thinking for off-road purposes, and I install a steering column from something else because I'm thinking that this old junk, all it'll ever do is bash around out in the bush or whatever, and just if that creates a liability. But I'll think about it, and I'll read up and study a bit more on it.
And through the chair, with respect to that particular question, I don't see how you putting a different steering column in that was, for lack of a better description, off-label, using a pharmaceutical term, but the notion that you put a Chevrolet steering wheel in a Ford vehicle, that would not create liability for an airbag. And to the extent that somebody later said that was a poor idea to put the Chevrolet steering wheel in a Ford vehicle, this law would have no impact on the current landscape.
Thank you. Senator Geese.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Klayman, these are provisions for the seller. Would it be prudent to have some buyer beware piece here? That is, that the sale of a used vehicle, pre-owned, whatever the term you want to use, requires a statement that this vehicle has, the airbag in this vehicle has not been inspected or has been inspected. Something to alert the consumer. Because how many consumers has this even crossed their mind?
I actually think that's a better question for Mr. Orland to answer, because he comes at it from the perspective of the manufacturing industry, but the manufacturing industry works very closely with the dealers as well, and I think he could probably address that better than I can.
Mr. Orland, were you able to hear Senator Geisel's question?
I was. Thank you very much. That's a great point. Consumer education is something our industry is working very diligently on, and again, we've worked with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, AAA, and other safety groups to make sure that consumers are aware of this problem as best we can. What we wanted to avoid was putting an undue burden on dealers and individual sellers. The reason we're targeting airbags specifically is because it's such a critical safety part, and because it's a part that is not really a do-it-yourself repair. So by stopping these from getting into the stream of commerce, we think we're appropriately addressing the issue. And just if I can briefly mention that the last question that was raised about the steering column, the definition of non-functional airbag is very specific, so it wouldn't necessarily apply in the case that was raised, where there's a steering column put in with no steering wheel. And we've among the stakeholders we've worked with have been the salvage industry, including companies like LKQ and Pick and Pull, some of the largest salvage players in the industry, and they are supportive of this legislation as well. They don't see this having an impact on their business.
Mr. Chair, there's also there's another gentleman online that I was just notified of with the from the insurance side of this who may be able to provide further insight on that.
Yes, I would like, I guess, more clarity on the answer. I'm not quite sure what the answer was.
Senator Klayman, would you like Mr. Orland to provide further answer, or would you like to go to Mr. Handler?
Since Senator Geisel didn't get a very clear answer, Mr. Orland, I think you better try answering that question again.
Mr. Orland, please.
I apologize. Yeah, we do not object to any sort of notification to consumers about the problem of counterfeit airbags. That is not something we oppose. We think we've done a lot of work to educate consumers, and we certainly don't oppose that being included.
Thank you.
Does that answer the question? I apologize if it doesn't.
Thank you. Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Vice Chair. Senator Klayman, this question I think might be best in your wheelhouse. And so I'm curious, and I'm new to this committee, so I might stumble a bit, but I do have some interest in the Federal Trade Commission's Act and some aspects of false advertising, fraudulent claims. And I'm not sure how selling a counterfeit airbag doesn't fit within that, particularly when we talk about international sales. The provided testimony indicated that many of these airbags are coming from China, and so there seems to be that there should be some regulation in that, or at least some consequence that pertains to that particular act.
Right. And through the chair, he's actually the chair until I resume the seat. The federal sanctions, which oftentimes are stronger than state sanctions, require a level of investigation that if you depend on the federal government to investigate and prosecute all these cases, you actually make it more difficult to create barriers, or not barriers, but to create consequences for the small actors who are engaged in bad conduct. And I think you may want to get an opinion from Mr. Orlan on this as well, but my general answer to that is that you don't want to reduce the federal sanctions, but their ability to police this in large areas is actually supported by state laws like this, because they're going to be trying to intercept these at the border or in ports where you're bringing in large numbers. But once they've gotten in through the border and they start getting into the stream of commerce, then you're talking about 5 airbags here or 10 airbags there. And so the ability to have a state prosecution literally at a level of the federal government might well say, they only sold 10 bags. It's not high enough on our priority list. And so I think part of the advantage of having state statutes is it gives state prosecutors the ability to go after kind of small-time actors, whereas the federal government's more likely to be looking in ports and other places where things are getting imported at the first point. And I'm not sure Mr. Orlan may or may not have something to add.
Mr. Orlan, did you want to expand on that answer, or did that do the job?
That was a very good answer. I would just add to it that our industry works, especially through the Automotive Anti-Counterfeiting Council, works very closely with the International Property Rights Center and the FBI and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And the primary tool in their toolbox to confiscate these products is a violation of federal trademark law or a violation of hazardous materials labeling. So if an airbag comes through with the Honda H or the Ford Oval, it's very easy for them to seize that product. If it doesn't have that marking, then it's a much more difficult, because there isn't necessarily a federal law against making a bad replacement part. So we've worked with the International Property Rights Center in crafting this legislation, and by having these state laws, they're now able to seize some of these products. They work with the attorney general or district attorneys of that jurisdiction to seize those products and keep them out of the chain of commerce.
Thank you. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Klayman, in the, let's see, it's page 2, around line 23, where it's referring to a non-functioning, let's see if I'm on the right line. What I'm wondering is, will this cause the need for, I guess I'm struggling with how to express it, but if I sell a car and I guess that would be covered by the clause, doesn't require the need to inspect. But if I have one that has been recalled, would I have to check to see that the airbag has been recalled before I sell it? Would that be a requirement?
Through the chair, do you mean recalled based on airbag issues or something
else? Yes.
If a vehicle has been subject to recall, and you're the buyer or the seller?
Seller. Thinking as an individual.
And I'm just trying to – so if I get your hypothetical correctly, you own a car and you get a recall notice for the airbag on your car. And then you sell the car without going to the dealer and having them deal with the airbag recall?
Follow up. I guess what I'm saying is I own a car. Somehow I don't know that it's been recalled, but there's a recall on the airbag. And, I have it up for sale on Craigslist or, Facebook, wherever. And so... then it's sold, and later on the new owners find out that it had a recall on the airbag. Maybe I just didn't know about it. I guess what I'm wondering, does it create a responsibility for private owners to carefully check all recalls before they sell a car?
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, I believe that if you don't have knowledge of the recall, then you're an innocent seller without knowledge. If by contrast they could show that you they sent you an email saying, come in, you need your airbag replaced. They showed they sent you a letter to your known address, and you acknowledged that you lived there the whole time you owned the car, and then you sold the car and never got the airbag recalled fix, or the recall addressed. In that instance, I believe that you might have a hard time proving your lack of knowledge.
Thank you.
To that point, but if there's no replacement, it's not non-functioning under the definition at line 23, right? If it hasn't been replaced?
I think that may be true.
Okay.
I mean, I think that I would say in the context of a recall, it's hard to imagine that if you got a recall notice and you were aware of it, that you would say, oh, I don't need to worry about this. That's just kind of hard. That's hard to imagine if the chain of commerce has notified the owner that they have the car that needs a new airbag, and all you have to do is take it to the dealership and you're going to get a new airbag. It's hard to imagine somebody would go for months or years without taking care of that.
Senator Giesel, did you? There being no other questions from the other committee members, I'll take a turn here. There was discussion, and I appreciated Mr. Orlan's comments about working with state's attorneys general and helping to interdict these things. The question that comes to my mind is not necessarily one of the federal laws, but it seems that everything covered here would be covered under Alaska's Unfair Trade Practices Act. Is a criminal penalty necessary for Alaska's Attorney General to seize these counterfeits, to cooperate with federal authorities and provide them resources?
Mr. Chair, I would actually say I'd want to look at that. The areas in which I'm familiar with the Unfair Trade Practices Act is more about the treble damages provisions, and not in this specific area. So I'd want to take a look at that and get back to you.
Thank you. And then the other question I had was just about fitting, assuming that a criminal penalty is a good idea here, a necessary thing, fitting that within the general progression of our criminal penalties. Certainly, phony airbags create a real safety risk. Looking at some of the other things in our law, sprinkler systems, smoke detectors, deliberate misdeeds with those generally are B misdemeanors. Are there other provisions that you look to by contrast to set the proposed penalties here?
To the chair, specific to the A misdemeanor versus the B misdemeanor for the installation without injury involved. The stepping up to the felony is where you have serious physical injury or death. But our thinking in terms of the A misdemeanor versus the B misdemeanor as to the initial level was that we believe that the conduct of installing counterfeit airbags reflects a kind of a heightened degree of intentionality that, I mean, I haven't thought about it in the context of sprinklers, but that heightened intentionality is why I'm comfortable with it as an A misdemeanor and not the lower level of punishment. Because if you have knowledge that this really doesn't work and you're thinking, well, if I bought a OEM operators, whatever the initials are for the operators approved equipment, if you're getting that and that would cost you $100 and instead you're getting a $30 airbag and you know that it actually doesn't function and you still put it in the car, to me that there's a level of sequences of conduct that makes that more culpable than kind of a B misdemeanor type conduct. And I can't bring you to specific instances in the criminal code, but I would just say it's a rough sense of equity about those things.
Thank you. I just wanted to sort of get the conversation going on the topic. The last question I had was about the elevation to a felony, and I guess the question is how you prove, how a prosecutor shows that the serious injury or the death is due to a non-functional airbag. I half my question was answered by Mr. Orlon when he said some of these are explosives with nothing to catch them, right? I get that. On the other hand, you know, car crashes are terrible things, especially at high speeds, where sometimes even an airbag is not sufficient to prevent a death. How do we envision showing the causality?
That's, Mr. Chair, that really is a trial evidence question. There's accident reconstruction experts who look at these kinds of things. There's accident and injury reconstruction experts that would go and look to see, you know, would this accident have been fatal with or without an airbag? And how did this airbag deploy or not deploy in a way that caused certain injuries? And so it's going to end up being very fact specific. I mean, an airbag, say, that didn't deploy, and then they hit the steering wheel and had some substantial facial injuries, lots of bleeding and all the stuff that comes with a really bad head injury, and that probably is going to qualify as serious physical injury. And you could probably say, look, if you had an airbag, that's the difference, and you could get somebody to testify that. But that's going to be evidence driven and not something that, in my perspective, you could easily legislate for what that means. And you just want to see the specific instances.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Chair. And this may be a question for you or Mr. Orland, because I'm just trying to wrap my brain around this idea of not trying to prevent this situation that you just described. I can grapple with the individual to individual, but when it comes from a dealership, when it's certified pre-owned, I'm curious of what does certified pre-owned mean? It seems like there could be ample opportunity to talk about how we could prevent this injury from happening by including an inspection of the airbag, particularly if this is such an egregious issue and something we should be proactive in. I really don't want someone to have a circumstance where we're at this point where we have to prove or reconstruct an injury. So maybe that's my question, is what is certified pre-owned, and if we get some more information about what is included in that inspection.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I think we can get you information on what certified pre-owned is, but I would go back to what Mr. Orland testified to, and it's also my understanding that the only way to inspect an airbag is to actually take it out and look at it. And if you are going to now say to auto dealers, and it's really not just the franchise dealers, like the local Honda dealer or the local Ford dealer, now you're talking about somebody that sells 20 cars a year, and if you're going to create a duty on them to, whether they certify pre-owned or don't certify pre-owned, if you're going to create a duty for them to take out every airbag and inspect to see that it's not a counterfeit airbag, you're going to create burdens on the economy that I think are really essentially unacceptable. The other thing, and I think Mr. Orland can testify a little bit more about the numbers, but the actual numbers of counterfeit airbags, they're out there, but the vast majority of vehicles that are being sold have legitimate airbags. I mean, the average vehicle that gets sold hasn't been in an accident, or if it has, it's a fender bender and the airbag hasn't deployed. And so you have original airbags in the overwhelming majority, at least in my perspective. I'd ask Mr. Orland or the other gentleman that's here with the insurance side of the equation to testify. But I think that it's important enough because of the risk that's to consumers for not having a functioning airbag to have this as a criminal penalty, literally as a deterrent to those who might do this. But I think if you actually look at the total stream of commerce, if you pick the day in Anchorage and you took 100 cars that were for sale, used cars, and picked 100 that had airbags because they're new enough, which isn't that new anymore because they've been around for some, I would predict that you would probably find all 100 had properly functioning airbags. This is an effort to try to just take what I believe is a small part. It doesn't mean it's a small problem. It's just that we're selling millions of vehicles a year. Mr. Orlin and the gentleman from the insurance group may be able to provide more insight on that.
Mr. Orlin, would you care to address Senator Tobin's question?
Yeah, I think that's actually a fantastic answer that the senator gave. It really does get to the balancing act that we're trying to achieve here by not putting an undue burden on dealerships and individual transactions and smaller dealerships. We just want to try to stop these products from getting into the chain of commerce as best we can. In terms of what a certified pre-owned vehicle is, it means that it's been through an inspection by our dealership, and any repairs that were necessary at the point of that inspection have been made with original equipment parts. And for the most part, authorized dealerships are checking for a lot of these counterfeit parts. We're trying to keep an undue burden on some of the smaller unaffiliated used car dealerships and individuals who are selling maybe one or two vehicles. And if I could just for one quick second mention to a previous question about recalls, the definitions of counterfeit airbag and non-functional airbag in this legislation were very carefully crafted to ensure that whether or not somebody has notice of a recall or not, that a recalled part would not be considered a counterfeit or a non-functional airbag. The replacement language in there addresses that concern. We certainly didn't want to put the obligation, make that a criminal penalty.
Thank you. Oh, follow up, Senator Tobin.
So again, just to follow down this train of thought, what about when an airploid has been known to be deployed? Would there be some room or some conversation around an opportunity to have an additional inspection for those particular pre-owned vehicles? Or do you do that as part of a pre-owned inspection when you know the airbag has been deployed?
So for a certified pre-owned, a Honda dealer would. I can't speak to a non-affiliated dealership or an individual consumer.
Thank you. Senator Kaufman had a question.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Klayman. Thank you.
Please.
Yes. So I guess you may want to pass this along to Mr. Orlin, but I'm wondering if I have an airbag, an uninstalled airbag, if there's a non-destructive means of inspecting it. If I were to have airbag A and airbag B, it without taking them apart or otherwise damaging it, can I assure that they are functional or non-functional?
You're asking. To the chair, and then I'm going to punt. You're asking about not something that's on the car, but you actually went to a parts store and you got two airbags that you're going to install. You're asking about parts that are sitting on the table as opposed to installed in the car.
Thank you. Yes, through the chair. Yes, it's the tale of two airbags.
Now I'll punt to Mr. Orlin.
Mr. Orlin, with that clarification, would you care to address Senator Kaufman's question?
Sure, absolutely. So there are some physical tells on the exterior that, again, an individual consumer might not be able to identify, but the trained professionals who are qualified to install an airbag would. Some of those include just the way the wiring is connected, some of the markings on the airbag. There are also some obvious tells in the way that these airbags are sold. So under state franchise law in all 50 states, people who buy airbags should know that you can only get an authorized OEM airbag a new airbag, I should specify, through a franchise dealership. So if somebody is offering a new airbag on eBay or Amazon or Alibaba, that should be a red flag as well. So a lot of these tells are very obvious to the trained professionals who are qualified to installing airbags that may not be clear to a consumer. And that's part of the reason we're addressing – this legislation is only addressing airbags and not other – replacement parts. We didn't want to get into a situation where individual consumers might be prosecuted for acts they don't understand.
Senator Koff.
Yes, thank you. Follow-up to Mr. Orlin. Can you detect a non-functioning airbag typically or as they're counterfeited, one of the problematic airbags through the diagnostics by accessing the diagnostic port on a typical vehicle these days?
Yes, and that's part of the definition of non-functional airbag. It's saying that the diagnostic system is indicating that the airbag is not functioning, and then, you know, turning off that diagnostic system or removing that light bulb. Yes, the diagnostics can be a huge tool in that.
Follow up. Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Orlon again. So are there forms of counterfeits that somehow defeat that utility?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
At this time, we do have another testifier on the line, and Senator Klayman has expressed interest in hearing from him. We'll do that now as invited testimony. Mr. Howard Handler, if you would please put yourself on the record with your name and affiliation and provide your invited testimony on the bill.
Sure. Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we are. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Howard Handler. I am Senior Director of Government Affairs at the National Insurance Crime Bureau. NICB is a national, century-old, not-for-profit organization supported by approximately 1,200 property and casualty insurance companies, including many who run business in Alaska. Working hand-in-hand with our member companies and Alaska law enforcement, we help to detect, prevent, and deter insurance crimes. Counterfeit airbags are a national and growing concern. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has warned that counterfeit airbags have shown to consistently malfunction, from non-deployment to the expulsion of metal shrapnel. Airbags are subject to strict quality control standards to keep the public safe. Counterfeiters are much more likely to skirt these standards. Counterfeit airbags are procured in many different ways, from consumers unwittingly purchasing them online to unscrupulous body shops purposely installing counterfeits while billing for genuine bags. Authorities in Philadelphia recently announced the indictment of an individual accused of fraudulently importing counterfeit airbags and installing them in salvage automobiles, which were then reintroduced to the market. Agents recovered more than 450 counterfeit airbags and parts from the defendant's residence. No matter how counterfeit airbags are obtained and installed in vehicles, the results can be deadly. Accordingly, we strongly support SB 37, which creates a new criminal statute penalizing those who knowingly manufacture, import, sell, or install a counterfeit or non-functioning airbag. Doing so will give prosecutors the ability to seek criminal penalties against those who put profits over safety. The bill would also put Alaska in line with 30 other states and growing that have enacted similar laws. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Handler. Are there questions for Mr. Handler? Further questions for the bill's sponsor before we move to public testimony? Seeing none, at this time I will hand the gavel back to Senator Klayman to take public testimony on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'd like to open public testimony on House Bill 37. If you are on the phone, please make sure you are not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and is often difficult to hear what you're saying. But I'll start. Is there anyone in the room who would like to provide public testimony on Senate Bill 37? Hearing and seeing no one, looking on the screen, we don't have anyone that has called in to testify other than those who provided invited testimony, so we'll close public testimony. At this time, we will hold this bill for further review. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Monday, January 30th at 1:30 p.m., and we stand adjourned. The time is now 2:14 p.m.